Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome everybody to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Okay, we are thanking God for another day of being here. We all know that things happen. Things happen, and we don't want to pass up the opportunity to thank God for making it here. To Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio in New York City, currently with isolradio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m., and when he's not on the radio, he is racing New York with the best of live R&B events all over the best of venues as the CEO of the Track One Entertainment Company. You know, he's already got some things in motion for the summer, so head over to his website, track1entertainment.webs.com, and see what he's up to and see if you can be a part of it. To my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, DJ Domerica, Rodney Williams, Monster Mouse, and, of course, our activists and panelists in Toledo, Ohio, Deacon Zeddy Williams, thank you guys for all that you do on and off the air. And to my starting panelists, Al Tariq Atkins, Daylo Jenkins, Patrick Irvine, Professor Carlton Jones, Erica Talbert, Darlene and Arlene, you guys have been phenomenal in helping out with everything that we do. You guys were wonderful with the PR interview and what you do in your individual communities. I thank you all very much. All right, social media network people. Two, the Katie Barnett On the Edge Listeners Lounge. Thank you guys for being a very chatty bunch with the pre-broadcast topic discussion today. To Linda Miller and the Black Love and Conversations Group. To our sponsor tonight and all month, Mark Pittman, with his two groups, Real World Black News and Discussion and the Black History Suppressed Group, to Patrick Irvine and the Urban Intellectuals Open Discussions Group, Professor Carlton Jones and the What About Us Group, Marvin Young Capitalist N, and Sonny Gibson with the Black Mama Group. I appreciate all of your input, your constant feedback, your contributions. You guys are fantastic, so thank you all very much. We are officially, ladies and gentlemen, at 26,247 people listening, and I am so proud to say that we are honored with all of you listening in. So thank you. All right, tonight we are going to be speaking on a very, well, couple of things, very important issues. We're going to be speaking on the murders that we have been dealing with. We've dealt with the Renisha McBride young lady that was shot through a door, and her killer is on trial right now using fear for his life as a defense. We're going to be speaking about the Eric Garner murder. We're going to be speaking on Jonathan Ferrell, as well as the reason why I'm bringing them up is if we knew our laws as a people, if we understood them and we truly knew what our rights were, would we be able to act on our own behalf, and maybe things would turn out a little differently? That's what I'm asking all of you to tell me, if that's what you believe. Also, we're going to have a very special guest tonight to speak about the Masaryk Towers. This is a co-op building in New York City who apparently is practicing some not-so-nice practices with regards to evicting of a minority elderly woman. No notice. This poor woman had. She walked in and her house was just locked out. She was locked out of it, I should say. Her pets, her possessions are inside. No prior notice that any problems were happening. No litigations, and believe it or not, they're trying to also charge her legal fees for things that she didn't even know existed. So again, we're going to be speaking on if we knew the rights, our rights, and the way some of these things work, from your housing to the way the cops should be acting, to the way business should be handled, to the way loans are given out. Would we stand up for ourselves more? Would we know more? Would we act better? That's what we're going to be speaking on today. So until we get back from our pre-discussion song and a word from our sponsors, we will be back to get this party started. So don't go away, and be back in just a bit.
Like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything straightened away. driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Okay, today we're going to be speaking with the daughter of a woman who was illegally evicted from her apartment in the Masaryk Towers co-op facility in New York City, in Manhattan. This woman came home from work. Her door was locked. The locks were changed. Her possessions and her animals were inside. She wasn't given any warning. She wasn't given any type of eviction notice beforehand. She was not being cooperated with when she asked them to give documentation such as her signed lease and other things that explains how that particular property management office deals with evictions and how legal it is. And when she asked for these documents, she was stalled. They didn't give her anything, and she still didn't have access to her apartment. So she's an elderly minority woman. I'm going to speak on how most of the times the minorities get evicted, either through gentrification or if they're in some what people consider an elite property, there's some way and some unjust ways that they're being handled. When the people who believe they don't belong there anymore, or at least that's the perception here, want to get rid of them. And now with this being done, if she should happen to need to downgrade or downsize so that things could be a little better for her, with this particular action happening and she not fighting back to get back into her place, they can deny her and now have some bandwagon legality that they can play with to keep her out. This woman is elderly, but she still works. She's been sick, and she's always been on time. No matter how bad things got for her, she pretty much paid her rent on time. She had one particular time when things fell back, but she caught up, and then her son made sure when she was sick that her rent was coming up to date. Everything was fine by her and the property management office. However, she comes home 2 days ago, and she's out on the street. So without the policies in front of her to be able to read and understand and go over or review what she probably wasn't clearly spoken, explained when she signed the lease to get her in, now she's asking for what's within her right to get a copy of the document she signed and a copy of the management office eviction policy of the co-op board. They're not giving her this cooperation. She's an elderly woman. She's not very well. She got sick, but she still works. She still pays her bills. She doesn't rip up their property. She doesn't have any bad smells. She keeps her place clean. So if she had known or was able to be well-versed in what the law is about evicting people, period, on a regular, universal basis, would she have fought back? I'll be bringing that guest in just a minute. On the other hand, let's speak about the other atrocities in our community. Lately, we have two. A young girl named Renisha McBride, which up until now, that case wasn't getting any real attention by her own people. To some point, it was silent. It was now starting to pick up some attention. Young girl had a car accident. Yes, she may have been drinking. Matter of fact, they said she was. So what? She was drinking. She drove a car. She got hurt. She was disoriented. She came out just as Jonathan Farrell did, same exact type of case. Difference is, homeowner shot Renisha. A bunch of paranoid cops shot Jonathan Farrell. Both were disoriented. Both were hurt, injured. Both knocked on a white man's door. Both were killed. One killed this young woman through a closed door while claiming to be in fear for his life. The other one had a little more of a valid story. She actually opened up her door and saw this big black man standing there looking like he didn't know what he was saying. She got afraid. She had the right to go in and call the police. The police acted badly when they got there. Let's go over to Staten Island and get Eric Garner standing on a sidewalk, not doing a damn thing. The police acted illegally all the way around. They approached him and asked him what he was doing for no reason, but by the Lord's own admission, the police killed this man by utilizing an illegal chokehold maneuver, something that the cops are not allowed to execute. So if the neighborhood had been well-versed on that, would they have stepped up and acted on their rights? Maybe would they have had more courage to step in and actually defend the man before he got hurt? Or would we have still stood around with fear in our hearts and just videotaped these cops killing this man and continuously keeping him handcuffed with his lifeless body without attempting to revive him or anything? That's the question I want to hear from all of you. Do you think we would have acted differently, been a little better for ourselves if we were well-versed, educated in the rights under the law and the laws themselves in each of these particular situations? Would we have or would we be so damn afraid, even after shedding our ignorance about the matter, that we still would have been stuck in the same situations that we're in? That is our question. So before we do that, I'm going to bring in our guest, Ms. Elania, to speak about what's going on with her mom. Welcome to the show, Elania. Are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
Hi. Okay. When you approached me about this particular situation, I know that it was a couple of days ago when the actual incident was happening. You got to tell me a little bit more about what took place. And now I want you to tell the listeners from your own words what took place with your mother.
This happened most likely like around 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon. And that was when I think my stepfather, he realized that it was the locks were changed at the apartment. So he was the one who called my mother up and told her what happened, why he was going to the management office and try to fight it. And along the way, my brother, he also went to the management office to also try to fight it as well. My mother at that time was at work. So this whole thing happened when no one was home. We were all at work. And we would, doing our day, try to get our week over with on a Friday. And it didn't end so well, So the locks were changed. And, of course, she was just back on rent for a couple of months. And this happened close to 3 years ago. And instead of giving her, at least notice, from what I've known, I got evicted before. They give you at least a 72-hour notice, 24-hour notice, something like that, so you can at least go to court and fight it or do, a clause or something. But they didn't do that with her. They just automatically just gave her the eviction. They just automatically changed the locks, and that was it. They did the same thing 3.5 years ago, saying that she was just maybe 2 months behind on rent, so they locked the door. They changed the locks on the door.
Huh? Due to the that was due to the injury when she got a little behind on her
right.
on her rep.
Yeah.
And they didn't
yeah.
give her no wrist then either. They just changed her locks then
exactly.
as well. Okay.
Exactly.
They can't do that.
And back then, that time, it happened the same time on Friday afternoon. But that time, my mother, she was able to, you know, not my mother, but my brother, he put in the money to clear whatever that she owed. And then it happened again just this past Friday. It was she owed like maybe 2 or 3 months worth of rent, and she wasn't able to keep up to it. So instead of the management office telling her, listen, you know, you owe your back owe, or listen, it's going to get to the point that, you know, you're going to end up going to court or lock, changing the lock. They just automatically change the lock without her realizing it or even knowing it, or even giving her any type of warning.
Right,
it's
and where
so
were they
illegal.
Not? They were in the middle of allowing her to catch up with what she was buying at the time, and that was okay with them. They said nothing about it being a problem. Am I right?
Right. That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So they were okay with the way she was building up her back rent, and that was this
right.
time around. And 3 years ago when she paid up her rent, but she was behind before they gave her any notice then, they just locked her out of her place.
Right.
Okay. They can't do that. They can't
no,
do
no,
that.
They can't.
They can't do that. They have to give her some sort of notice. And I'm telling you, because there have been some cases out here, and this is, we're just talking New York, and you know that's our state. So they had some tenants from hell with people who just had these people coming to visit from out of town that were like relatives. And if you stay in a place more than a certain amount of days, that person assumes tenant rights even though they're not legally, like, on the lease.
Exactly.
So if they're telling that type of property owner or property renter or primary tenant that in order to get this guest from hell out of your house, you have to actually go to housing, landlord-tenant court
mm-hmm.
to remove this person legally, there's no way in hell that an actual primary tenant who's gotten no type of notification, okay, can be evicted twice from the house without any type of notification. That they
right.
did not tell me that they were also tacking on legal fees for the first time this happened.
Yeah, they tacked on the legal fees like later on, you know. So that means that she owed her 3 years, over the 3 years, oh my goodness, the 3 months, the 2 or 3 months, through time, they already did the process and everything through the court, and they added a legal fee instead of them giving her warning, and they never did.
And even that is not allowed, because in order for them to charge you legal fees, they have had to give you written documentation that
exactly.
there was a litigation in place. For you
right.
to say that when we sue you for what you owe us, which they didn't tell her, you also could be on the hook for legal fees. If she has no damn clue that there's a litigation in progress, how could she be on the hook for anything? Now, let me ask you something. Your mom... Did she ask for documentation or have her legal, because obviously her documents were locked in the house. So did she ask the property management to give her any type of documentation showing what the policy protocol is for evictions?
Well, in actuality, I mean, anybody who, I mean, it's not only her, but anyone who has asked for any type of documentation such as a lease, so, you know, it doesn't a lease what, you know, what are the rules and regulations or whatever when I, for the co-op is. And they give the tenants a hard. They really do give them a hard time. They don't even give them a lease. They tell, oh, listen, you should have your lease on you. Okay, if I don't have it, can I have another one? And they will give them a hard time. They will not give it to them.
And what about a manual or like a tenant's manual? Because that's
like I said,
supposed to be something
they give them a hard time. Yeah,
okay.
They will give them a hard time. They say, okay, listen, if you want that, you have to go to 100 Gold Street. And they're supposed to have it on the premises. So I'm like, okay, so you have to go to 100 Gold Street and go through the whole process and everything just to show proof that you live in that building, in that apartment. Please get documentation and a manual. And that takes, like, forever. It's ridiculous. They used to, like I said, 20-hour years ago, give you the lease. But then these co-ops, they're own, you know, they're run by board members. And these board members, like I said, I didn't say it before, but I'm going to say it right now. Most of them are illegal. We haven't had an election for new board members for so many years. Any board members has been around since I was a child, since I was a baby, you know. Father was the last board member. So you can imagine, I'm 33 years old. And I'm, you know, and I'm from the time my father was a born member to now, that's already 32 years that they have not had an election. You know, so they just recently was, they had an election last year, and they're bringing back an old board member that was there for 30 odd years back into become board members again, which is crazy.
You're absolutely right. And the marshal is not allowed to serve any papers on a weekend anyway,
right.
A Saturday or you know, a weekend.
Exactly.
So that would, even if they had given some, even if they had given her notice, they wouldn't have been able to serve it to, they would have to serve it to her, first of all. And they couldn't do it after 5 p.m. on a Friday. They definitely couldn't do it on the weekend. So she didn't get any type of documentation in advance.
No, nope.
They were okay with her pretty much catching up or paying the way she was with the rent date that she owed. They never said anything for any amount of whatever. And then she walks in 3 years ago when she was injured and fell behind to have the same exact thing happen this time around. No notification.
Right.
Now,
exactly.
You see, this is one of the examples that I'm bringing up tonight. 3 years ago, this happened to her. She didn't know anything. She didn't say anything. She didn't look it up. She probably figured that that's the way that they can do it. So
right.
Without us reading into what we're signing, without us really asking questions, without us, the fine print means what the legal jargon is, what does it mean when it looks like this and it could be that, is this what that means, without somebody taking the time out to ask the annoying questions and annoy the hell out of the person that is holding the contract in their hand for you to sign, we wind up getting sucked up into what we believe is we're the average Joes and they're the experts in the situation. And for minority groups and definitely the African-American community, this is where we wind up being self-damaging. Because had your mother known better, would she have been in this situation again?
Nope. Probably not. This is the second time within the past couple of years. I mean, I remember years back that they did give like a 72-hour notice, some type of 24-hour notice, and we were able to at least fight it and give us enough time to fight it and keep it from without even going far as changing the lock. So this time around, it's not even happening.
Right. Well, they're supposed to give a clear policy to all their tenants, and that I know from being in a condo as well. They're supposed to give each tenant not just the basic lease, but they're especially in a co-op that has board members that run the damn operation. They're supposed to give the tenants a policy booklet so that everybody understands the terms of their residency there. Everybody's
right.
Going to understand what could happen, when's the garbage day, how do you dispose of the garbage, when do you put it out, what's the fire chute, what's the dishwasher, washing machine policy, pet policy. All of that is supposed to be explained. The law in New York City is nobody can get evicted without some sort of A, warning, B, court involvement, especially
mm-hmm.
if there's a signed lease agreement.
Right.
Now, I do know that some private properties or privately owned properties have maybe another type of way they do it, but they can't circumvent the basic housing law. They can't just
That's
evict
right.
the person. They do have a marshal's law in place where marshals do not serve or sheriffs don't serve after 5 p.m. and on weekends or holidays.
Right. That's right.
So she got nothing twice.
Mm-hmm.
And because the first time there was no real fight, she had to go pretty much submit to whatever they said and got back in, and she didn't look it up or figure it out or do whatever. She figured that's the way it goes. So the next time around, everything's cool, they're not saying anything, and once again, we're back in an elderly woman being locked out of her house without notice. And this definitely would not happen to one of their own. So I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to bring in a couple of panelists coming in. That's a housing law that we don't seem to know much about, because pretty much the average person goes in, they want to know about what the kid policy is, what their washing machine policy is, what
mm-hmm.
any type of pets policy is, and as long as all those things are okay, we're allowed to have parties, we don't have any problem with guests, whatever the case is, that seems to be what we feel is okay. As long as we figure we're paying our rent on time, no problem. We know in the back of our heads universally what's going to happen. You don't pay your rent, you get behind, you get kicked out. You get kicked out,
right,
but
right.
You got to go to court. So that's what we go by. Many times, especially in these type of privately owned places or these board-run facilities, there are terms in there that seem clear and simple to you, but there's something in it that is not as simple as it appears to be, but it will kick you in the ass as soon as it's time to go to a litigation. Here's the problem. They gave her no notice of a litigation.
Nope.
Your mom gets out of work at what time on Friday?
I'm sorry?
What time your mom gets out of work on Friday? Is it after 5?
Oh, the usual time, like 4:30, 5 o'clock.
By the time she gets home, it's after 5, right?
Yes.
Okay, which means that when she knew about it, they could have locked it just before she got there, which means they did something at 5 o'clock.
Yep.
On a Friday, when nothing could be handled the next day or covered. So it's an illegal eviction. So now, what have you done about it? Are you taking any steps to try to get any higher authorities involved in this?
Yeah, and actually, I mean, right now she's working with, she's trying to work with BoxWorks right now, and, you know, she's trying to get everything straight. Hopefully, you know, they're able to give her some type of, you know, grant or something to, you know, whatever that she owes, whatever that goes for the rent, you know, that's paid up in full.
Has any of these people helped out or even acted like they were interested in the case?
I'm sorry?
Has anybody you gone to, have they acted like they're even interested in the case?
There are some that are interested in the case, and she'll have to answer tomorrow too for the court to see the housing. So from there, I guess we'll have to wait and see. You know, this I've never been through before. I've been evicted twice, and the thing is, I paid my rent in full. I was up to date with my rent and everything. They just didn't want me there. They wanted me out. You know, in both occasions, I had to leave. You know, even though the rent was paid in full, even though everything else was paid, I was a good tenant and everything, I still had to leave. They didn't want me there. You know, so, and this situation is crazy, you know.
Well, Mazaric Towers had another panelist. I see you there. Hang on. Mazaric Towers, as I was looking in today, they had another case like that a little further back where there was a succession of rights issue, meaning that the primary tenant is Chinese, had to leave the country for a little period of time to take care of some family business out there, but had family here because there was an elderly mother involved in the house. And they tried to evict the person by saying that they left their premises for too much time, so the board called it a permanent vacancy.
Yeah.
Okay. And they tried every little trick in the book by saying, and then he had the nerve to have people living there that he didn't go by the board and ask if he can do that because, you know, we got their bank statements. Their bank statements only shows that other person here. But they account itself didn't show any proof that they were using that bank account with that address for any real, like, expenses of living. They found very small deposits for like a few cents in each deposit. So what is 5 cents to actually living in a kind of co-op? So, but Mazaric Towers kept trying to push it because they wanted the family out. And they were finding every little loophole in the world to make the little skimpy evidence fit. And that's messed up. So let's bring in our panelists to start this discussion, see if they have any questions for you, okay? Hang on a minute. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Good evening, Katie. This is Al Tariq calling from Dothan, Alabama.
Hey, Tech 9. All right, hold on a minute. You got one more behind you. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Halo Jenkins calling from D.C. O'Callaghan's in the Jones.
Hey, Stilo, welcome. All right, Al Tariq, you have any thoughts on tonight?
Yeah, it's just a messed up situation because, you know, people and when you certain things happen, it was wrong how they did that. I understand that. And the way things go, and thank God, you know, that, you know, it was times that certain things got a certain way, even where I stay, but we had a good landlord. So she worked with us, you know what I'm saying? And if you don't have those type of people, then, you know, eventually you're going to have to move on from them because it'll always be that way. Because a lot of people, they don't care about the times we're living in, how hard things are or how they make it for you. They're ready to, you know, kick you out. You know, and you can be basically, you know, have been with them even for years and basically paid your rent pretty well. And they'd be ready to throw you out there to the wolves. You know, so the best thing that, you know, advice that I can give from that, you know, because a lot of times I watch different shows with different issues happening. I didn't have to see where they got that radical with it. But the thing is, I believe that, you know, most judges will even say, well, if you had those type of problems, why didn't you just move from there? See, they even come with that. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can get your things. You know, your mother could get her things and stuff like that, and y'all could find somewhere else. You know, that probably would be the best bet, and hope that you can get a good landlord, because these certain landlords, sometimes they don't really like nothing about you. You know, they just want their money, and that's all they want. And they don't care about the conditions are or anything like that. You know, and I believe that y'all probably aren't the only ones that even happened to, you know. But foolish, this is just a sad thing, and I wish the best for y'all. And I don't actually know of any legal thing that I could say about it, because a lot of times they don't be for us like that, you know. And right. They say certain things that KD was telling you, you know, and that's I'm pretty sure that's valid, you know, and that is law. But nowadays, the way that things are going and the way certain people are behaving overall, and they have the little bit of upper hand and it's theirs and stuff like that, they tend to, you know, act like, you know, act like buttheads, you know. So the best thing you can do really overall, you know, besides getting your things, is try to find a better spot for your mother to be at, you know. So you won't have to deal with this type of situation necessarily. And sometimes I even think that, like, if you're in a place where you have to be paying too much money, you may have to decide on trying to get where you can get in the area location where you can be able to where you're at, because it may be too much even where you're staying at, you know. So you may have to y'all may have to look for a place, you know, where you can get somewhere if you have to move out of town, out of state even, because a lot of people are moving. Where are you located? Are y'all in New York?
Yes. It's really expensive in New York City. Really, really expensive.
Because it's a lot of people that's moving out, and, you know, they're jacking up these high prices, and depending on the area where you're staying, especially if it's a place where a lot of minorities at, you know, I've heard on a couple other different shows, where they were talking about gentrification and they want to move back into the cities. So they're doing whatever and they're forcing us out through ownership of different things. So they jack up prices and all that type of stuff and make it where you can't afford it so you can get the hell away from them.
Well,
you know, so
something
that y'all can do, that's the only thing I can advise.
There's a point that, I mean, it's not only that they raise the price up to keep people out. There's been buildings down here in the lower Manhattan that the people are being bought out. Then they'll buy them out so they can move elsewhere. And then they end up not able to pay the rent in the other location because it's too much money. It's just, you know, and then the whole building is remodeled and the rent goes up more. And there's no way that the person can go back in because they're already been bought out. And they accepted it, too. So you see a lot of families who are in the good.
Yeah, it's really crazy. And it's like a lot, they had a little situation like that with Palmanac Housing in Flushing, Queens, okay, in Queens, New York. They had a situation where it's part of the NYCHA housing, that's the New York City Housing Authority facilities, and all of these black families and, you know, non-white families were being sent to, like, the boondocks. They have a Far Rockaway area. Now, understand, ladies and gentlemen, mm-hmm. Far Rockaway is a nice, big, beautiful place, but it's a sort of a all-by-itself planet-type island that gets the worst.
Yeah.
It's lined by a beach, like nothing but the ocean, okay, mm-hmm. where they built these houses and these buildings on. Hurricane Sandy got these guys out there almost like Hurricane Katrina got Louisiana. Okay, and
mm-hmm.
that's the way that it's built. It is on the beach, so the high tides and the winds that came, all of those minority people got hit real hard and had to be evicted. Now, these were the places that they were happily approving these housing projects for, these housing applications for these black families. Now, what happened was they were denying applications or putting these black families on hold when there were plenty of two-bedroom and three-bedroom apartments empty and abandoned and waiting for habitation in the white area. But Palmanac was denying people entry because they were waiting for white corporate families to come in that could pay them money and not accept the low income or the fixed subsidies that housing was actually created for.
Mm-hmm.
So to this day, there's still people there, and all these black families wind up having to go onto a class action suit where they started to open up to more families, and there's now more black families living there, but there's still some very empty units there waiting on people to come in that can pay them high money. So if we knew our rights, and obviously that class action group of people did, then probably would have happened sooner. Maybe there would be even more action and there wouldn't still be those over 30 or 40 apartments that's still empty, waiting on the perfect contributor.
Yeah.
So we have to open up our damn minds, and we have to open up our mouths, and we have to stand and take action. Now, Stalo, I'm going to hand you the mic, and then I'm going to ask the three of you the next part of this. So go ahead, Stalo. What's your take to this week?
My take on this whole thing is, let me tell you a little bit about what we're wasting our time with, right? We banging on each other all the time and wasting as much time as we can, you know, and it's so insecure to keep banging on each other when this is exactly what we need to be focused on, our rights. Let me tell you a little bit about hate, you know. Hate is a root. So it bears so many branches. So when you hate your enemy, right, and when you hate your enemy and you are of an oppressed people, you're always going to see your oppressor or aspects of the oppressor in your own people, in the fellow oppressed. So you're constantly hating each other when what we really need to be associating ourselves with is the knowledge of self and the knowledge of our rights and the things that we can do to protect ourselves, you know. That would be the best discernment, you know. If we know our rights, we know that we created rights. We fought blood, sweat, and tears for these rights in this country, and it, even further back, we created the whole concept of justice. Our heritage created this. You know, the ancient Egyptian, the ancient African created the courtroom and the judge and all this. So we know ourselves. Banging on each other, it has to stop. You know, we must educate ourselves and educate the people around us out of our own fear. You know, the greatest discovery that I make when I find out about myself and find out about my rights is that the awesome white man discoverer thing is a myth, all right? It's blatantly an exaggeration and a lie. You know, and it's a condition that we can even pity, because when we look into history and we look into the rights of this country and everything that we are doing, you know, those of us that don't, see, the thing is, you, ma'am, you have a full on discrimination lawsuit. You know, based on the equal housing, at least the Equal Housing Act. You know, at least you have several lawsuits against these people for damages that have been done to you. So that's for one thing. So that's not a question. The question is, are all of us in the right? See, the laws are set into place for a reason. Here in D.C., there was an act, a Georgetown act. There's a reason no black people live in Georgetown now. There was a law set in place that said all Negroes must leave. So since then, we have made it so that the whole concept of equality under the law will then reflect itself. So now we have equal housing authorities and all this and that that's doing nothing because we put no pressure on them. You see what I mean? So we are constantly put pressure on these things. Like, I know some of the laws in D.C., you can't even be evicted in bad weather if it's raining, snowing, anything like that. Like, there's a lot of laws set in place, but they don't want you to know about them. But the federal law, which is the civil rights law and the law against the discrimination against women, you know, and we have to educate ourselves. We have to educate the children here in D.C., you know, every day, the children and everybody else, white, black, Hispanic, everybody else are constantly around those who want to exploit them all the time. So without knowing their rights, they are helpless, especially in an urban environment like D.C., New York, everywhere from wherever people are listening from right now. You know, the rights thing, you know, it's... You see, the whole concept of being equal, you know, means there's a lot of work to be done. That's the whole point, you know. And I guess that's all I want to say.
Yeah, and now, so also, Elaine had to go back. Her mom is not doing too well, so she's off with us now, but she's been listening. Now, my question, I see you, Cola. I'll bring you in. And Stalo, I think there's some background noise from you, sweetheart. How, Tariq, let me ask you this. Let's speak on the direct relationship between us not being fully versed in our laws and then our rights within the law as to these three murders and, of course, the other murders that were highly publicized. Would knowing our rights, first knowing the law itself, then knowing our rights within the law, meaning how these locals can come in and act, how businesses must conduct themselves when they're opening a new facility, how loans must be dispersed, how police should be acting, things to that effect, how even private security officers that's patrolling your housing complex should be acting and what they're allowed to do. If we knew all these things, would we have acted differently with the list of murders that I spoke of today, with regards to the way it was handled, with regards to the way we would have handled the police on the site? Do you think that would have made a difference?
Well, from what you were saying earlier, I believe that, yes, of course, if we make a stand, when you make a stand for anything, it's bound to make a difference. But it's like how you said, a lot of times we got two here. And let alone fear the ignorance of the laws, and at the same time, it's instances where we know of certain things and we still get muscled. So it's like, you know, sometimes it's like you can't win for losing. You know, when they're just hell bent on doing something wrong to you, a lot of times they get over. You know, and a lot of times we don't get outraged enough to show them that, no, you cannot keep doing this and just keep getting away with it. But the thing about it is, and it's the sad thing, that somebody else is going to have to either get hurt or something like that in order for things to happen when it really comes down to it, because the laws that we have in place, you know, it's like, well, at certain times, you know, we may get justice, but then at other times we not. So, you know, something's going to have to happen, you know, and it's a sad thing, and I know a lot of people will get scared of it, but sometimes certain things take drastic measures, and are we going to be willing to take those steps if it even comes to that? Because when it comes to the other side, they showing us, hey, we do this and we won't get off. And they show us in the media and everything. And then they get so bad about their choking, they're saying all types of stuff. You know, a few of them out of the police station saying some crazy things about the guy.
Let me tell you something. I'm sorry, Al-Tariq. What I think disturbs me most about, more than just the obvious that the man got hurt and died, was that it's an illegal maneuver to make from the force itself.
That's right.
It's illegal. My problem with our community is you don't know that. You didn't know that. We assume that anybody who's wearing a uniform in some professional capacity is the expert, has the authority, that our words will really mean nothing. Look at how all these white boys are videotaping, how they're standing up to the police with the most outrageous of things, and the police are letting them walk away. Now, listen, I know all of us know that that would probably happen simply because of the color of his skin.
Mm-hmm.
But let's take a look at the video that was distributed by the Moorish community. The Black Moorish community, where the man tried to arrest the boy, the man's son, and that man came out and fought it down and videotaped and fought. He fought and videotaped, and his son went right back in that house undetained.
Yeah.
So, my question is, yes, videotaping is one step. It's proof, it's evidence, it's something we could distribute. But the whole point is, if we had known that that was illegal by the cops themselves, if we had known, wouldn't we have been a little more courageous in saying, you wasn't even supposed to do that? As much as we would be in fear, would it maybe that have been a boost for us that one person can say it and maybe the other person, as shaky as it might be, they might join in slowly and then we can start charging and have a force that way? Maybe this man, Eric, wouldn't have been so badly attacked. Maybe he would have been treated a lot better even when he was down. They still had handcuffs on this man's lifeless body.
Mm-hmm. So right. And like how you said, if you know, like how they even say that saying, you know, ignorance of the law is no excuse. You know, yes, that is a main thing that we need to learn, to better defend ourselves. And on top of that, the way that a lot of things are going on, that's being, you know, that it's more people that's like him that's not getting reported and stuff like that. We're going to have to be in a well-lit area. That was a pretty well-lit area, though. And, I mean, from what he was doing, the people that say that, I know people know when a certain lethal chokehold is being applied if they're seeing it. And you can see that the person, how their body reacts, if their body goes limp and all that stuff and they're not moving, you know that something is not right. You know, so it's up to y'all to make some type of statements or something, because this was videotaped. And it, to me, it'll be a dire travesty of justice if they get away from the death of this man. And that'll just really show me outright, we don't care about what we do to y'all. And this same guy that had been in trouble before. That's the sad part about it.
Listen, this man wasn't hurting anybody. I haven't really been picking up the updates on the story, but I don't hear anything about the man having had a criminal record, a record of violence, a record of threatening, or anything to that effect for anybody to have walked up to him to make him standing on the sidewalk a threat in their mind, a fear for their life. They had no right to even walk up and ask him a damn question. He wasn't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
To further then wind up taking his life from something that they're not even allowed to practice with their uniform and their badge and gun. That is where the neighborhood needed to be informed and get the hell up and do something. Videotaping is great. After the fact, when it's time for conviction or whatever the hell the case is, they've got some solid proof to show it. But we even saw that in the George Zimmerman trial, evidence up the behind and all sorts of audio recordings of a telephone conversation and the pattern wasn't even good enough. That's why with us being educated and knowledgeable and full of action behind it, this might have gone differently. Maybe Renisha Miss Black's death wouldn't have been taken so long to get some attention, or for this guy to be able to have the audacity to say that behind a closed, alarm-ridden screen door.
Mm-hmm.
There was a threat on his life by a small girl who was disoriented. Don't get me wrong. Some strange person comes walking through my door on my porch, banging on the door or doing whatever. I'm calling the cops, too, and I might bring a pot with me to the door just in case.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But to just shoot to kill, to shoot on contact?
Yeah.
And then have the nerve to say, I truly fear for my life, Your Honor. I was behind two screen doors and a lock and an alarm system, and this little girl was a threat to my life.
No, not really.
And that's the double reverse right there that we got to acknowledge, that the whole rights thing is always double reverse when, when you're dealing with high people. Like for instance, somebody just mentioned that, you know, as a black man, you got to be careful in the workplace just because you look like a threat to white women sometimes, you know. And we're talking about this brother. This brother lost his life on a corner by the hands of the police. Basically no outrage. That's crazy. And it's almost like, you know, we saw it in a movie before. It's absolutely crazy, for real. You know, and they killing people, they killing the children in the street. There's still children in the street that they haven't paid for. They haven't felt any repercussions for killing in the street here in D.C. and everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a whole, they need to pay the community. The community is in itself. We could, you know, there's too much discrimination going on across the board as far as housing and this criminal activity by the police officers, which mostly they operate within the inner city, within the housing.
Yeah. And that's just the thing. If we would take a minute, or if we understood it, and that's not just for African American community, the average citizen, I need that background noise to be checked, please. What? The average citizen on the whole doesn't really understand legal jargon. There's a lot of little fine print in a lot of these, what we consider basic or simple contracts or agreements. But there are other people in the other communities that have the backup network of people that will inform them or be there for them in the event that something should happen and they feel like they're getting screwed over or whatever the case is. By that point, we aren't. By the time that we figure out that something is up, we're already out of our position. We've already lost whatever, and we have to go and fight for it back or get it replaced or move on someplace else and beef about it. So us learning now, us knowing our rights and being able to execute our rights within a law that's supposed to be universal to all, maybe that's something that even though we know what the bottom line underneath the table is, we make sure we make enough noise publicly so that under-the-table garbage can be under the table and they can try something else from a different way, but we got what we need to get done.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to figure out, they shot a 5-year-old baby, they got a 2-year-old kid, they're smacking little boys on the plane. They're punching out 5-year-old kids coming out of a daycare center with a 63-time felon. And if that had been a one-time offender to a little white boy coming out of a daycare center, how would the tables have been turned? There would have been an outrage from here to next Texas, to the new planet, to the U.K., with a line of protesters, with a line of advocates, with a line of people telling you just how disgraceful it is for this person to have been in jail just once and punched the sweet little white boy coming out of a daycare center. How atrocious is that? What a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And they know their rights. By Section 4.530.777 in the Penal Code of the United States, blah, 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 this should have happened. And if you don't, then you're not going to get our vote next year.
Mm.
Wake up, Black America. Wake up. Got a few listening in right now trying to figure out what kind of nigger they're going to call us next.
Mm.
There's a person coming in. Let me bring him in. 1 second. I'm going to bring him in, but Salo, the question is going to be posed to you before the new guest gets the mic. Welcome, Jungle Fred. You got to hold on 1 second. The guy before you gets the mic, and then it's your turn. Sayla, so what's your deal? Do you believe that if we were more versed in our laws and in the our rights under those laws, that we would act a little differently?
Absolutely. I think we act a lot differently, and that's the whole push that I'm trying to push for, starting here and starting with the work I'm trying to do. We need to be versed in our rights just to function in America. We need to understand that, and when we understand that, we need to incorporate it into the education of the children. It just has to be done. It truly has to be done. We have to, because our children no longer can die in the street. You know, well, now we have Google. Now you do see it face to face all the time. Now it is world star and always seen. And now, you know, we got a few people who are like watchdogs who are watching out and trying to expose what's going on. You know, and so at this point, if it continues to happen and we don't do anything. If we don't do anything, and at the very least, we should fortify our children, fortify our young soldiers, male and female, here in America to know how to operate. How is America operating? What are their rights? We don't need to so-called, because the thing is, we don't shelter them when it comes to the filth and the smut all over the television screen that they can watch and this and that. But we do show to them when it comes to their history, and we do show to them when it comes to the reality of the law in which they live.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And I believe, like I said, if we were more well-versed in understanding how certain factors can come into, you know, have to be followed when certain authorities or officials or leaders or, you know, watchmen come into your neighborhood, deal with your housing effects, you know, deal with your banking, deal with your medical care. If we were well versed in how the hell things are supposed to go and a little more protocol savvy, half of these things wouldn't pass or get through or even be able to be repeated. Because I do believe that despite all the fear we know we have, if we at least have that and we acted on it once or went to somebody who could make a difference and somebody has listened, we will push further. All right, Jungle Fred, you're up. Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Do you think that if our people were a little more versed in understanding of the laws and our rights under the laws, that half of the things that took place with the murders that we're talking about and the housing illegal eviction that we spoke about, would that have happened differently, or would different action have been taken?
Well, I think if we was more diverse, well, in my humble opinion, we'll have the understanding that the laws was not created to protect us. And the only action that we pretty much could take is to defend ourselves. I mean, I don't think we'll be complaining as much. We'll be taking more action of defensive versus verbal. We really want that voice, because there's no way a race that claimed a land and brought products from Africa to help build on the land is going to make laws or change laws to protect or to go against themselves. Or when I say to protect their products, which is in terms going against themselves. And once we understand that, then we'll take the approach more of action versus verbal. If it's more diverse with it. Now, of course, there's some cases where you can manipulate things and use the law to try to help you, but the big scale of it, it's not going to help you because it was never created for you. Maybe one or two may slip, you know, through the hole. Yeah, that happens. Why? But that's like pacifying the people. So sometimes you have to have a pacifier. But once you understand what the law is for, the complaining will stop and action will be taken. That's my take on it.
That's a good point.
That's what they want us to be, complacent. And I agree to an extent to what you're saying, but I will say that no, this law, this land is, you know, this thing is, this land is inherently going to be our land and any operation going on in this land. The funny thing is, even though the people in the higher positions might be white people and this people and that people, but the system put in place, I put it there. You know, my people put it there. You know, the whole concept of government, the whole concept of any of the civilization, you know, when you think of it. So when we talk about the best lawyers in America have been black men, the best people to get things done, to have laws actually changed, have been black men, you know, Thurgood Marshall and the like, you know. And the rest of the people, and like that was a major thing. The thing is, it's been novelized. It's been turned into a novelty. The civil rights movement. It was turned into some little thing that we go into a gift shop and buy. But it was actually a movement of intellectuals, of people always complaining. And making sure that stuff was made knowledgeable to those who were intellectually banging this warfare out. So, in addition to what you said.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I know according to the Constitution, a Negro, which means dead to history or dead of self, when brought here, he was considered three-fifths. Yeah. Yes, we were considered Negro when we first came here. Yes.
Oh.
Yes, that's correct. And the English term and the Greek term is Negro, which is N-E-K-I-O, or Latin N-E-C-R-O, which means dead to self or dead to history. When we was brought here as those terminology, which is not, according to the origin of the word, according to the white or to oppressor. Now, when we brought it, we was considered three-fifths of a human, which is a subhuman, and that's in the Constitution. Now, if we created that law, why would we make ourselves subhumans?
I don't see, the thing is, what you're talking about is exactly what I'm talking about, people moving. We're talking about de facto law, right, versus something that's made concrete. And the thing is, yeah, when you got a whole culture of racism, right, in America, yeah, they're going to push the law to say nigga is, like you said, nigga. Okay, but
okay,
I know the origin. You say the origin of the word.
I'm sorry.
You say the origin of the word. Yes.
I was going to let gentlemen know. Listen, I'm understanding where both of you are coming from, but you guys are kind of straying off the topic, and I need the topic to be back on the table. And, Carla, I see you there. I'm going to bring you in just a second. My question is not what we know we need to change and continuously start to change. I'm speaking right now with the way society is in place, with the specific situations that I brought up right now. The illegal eviction from the elderly minority lady. The 3, 4, 5 murders that just took place within this last year alone and a couple within the last couple of weeks. If we had been well-versed in knowing that the police were never allowed to use that particular chokehold on a person and people were standing by sort of when it began to happen, would that have given us a little strength to say, you can't do that, rather than just sit back and watch this boy get beat to death, killed, and then we're videotaping so we can make it go viral? Which, matter of fact, one of the people who are in there saying that, this is going to go viral right here because this is what they do up in Staten Island. They're not just doing it in Staten Island, lady. So if we have known better, if we understood that police just can't walk up and put a chokehold on you, as a matter of fact, would we still be fearful, or would being empowered with the knowledge of how the legal system works or how the cops are supposed to act, and more than one of us said it, would that have made a difference? Would Venetia McBride's death be some shadow overshadowed in the back burner article that it is now, now slowly coming to the surface? Would we have been more adamant in saying he wasn't supposed to do that? And what do you mean he's using a threat on my life as a defense? Would we? Or would you? Do you believe that we would still be frozen in fear or stuck hiding in ignorance? That's my question. That's the conversation I need for you guys to have right now. So, Salo, you can answer that question, and then I'll go back to you, Jungle Flex.
Okay.
Salo?
All right, say it one more time. What was the question?
Oh, Lord, honey. I said, with what we have on the table, okay, the specific incidents we spoke about tonight, if Eric Garner's neighborhood had known that the police can't use that particular maneuver,
yes,
would that have made a difference in the way they reacted?
Absolutely, it would have made a difference. Now, if people as a whole could have known that that chokehold was illegal, the response would have been different. So now we understand that the whole time, that understanding of our rights and knowledge of our rights is the way they've been holding us down all along, right? See, the thing is, yes, like the brother said just a few minutes ago, yeah, they did have a de facto law where they considered us nigger and three-fifths of a man and such and such and such, but since then, and see, a lot of times people like to negate the since then. Since then, we have fought about slavery and demanded and took forth the rights that we had in anyway, the rights as a man, and we are here, and now that we are here, and we now have changed laws, had a civil rights era and everything, why do people want to negate that era of time? Now, we fought for that era of time, you know? We fought for everybody, and everybody benefits from this law also. So at the same time, what you want to negate, what birthed it? We cannot negate what birthed it. What birthed it was true freedom. And that's freedom of mind. No, you don't just say, oh, that's just the way American law works. You just must work with it, in between it. You know, you must always be, you know, up, you know, slipping through the cracks. That's basically what they're trying to tell you, that you can't be of the law that you created. And yes, you did create it.
Okay. I'm going to bring in our other panelists. Jungle Flex, you will have the chance to answer that question again, and then our new panelist will have his shot. So, hi, welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
How you doing, everybody? This is Patrick.
Hey, Patrick. Let me just let the guests before you, answer the question based on the way I posed it, and then you'll have your shot, okay? So, Jungle Flex. Now I'm going to ask you again, with the specifics that I've listed here tonight, the elderly minority woman getting illegally evicted, not once but twice, with all of the murders that we just spoke about, Venetia McBride, Eric Garner, Kendrick Johnson, Jonathan Sorrell, if we had known that the way the police acted was illegal to their own superiors in their own department, would it have made a difference in the way we reacted?
All right, going to the question you propose, I really truly believe we would act a little differently and try to enforce the law to be on our side, but I would still have to go, I would have to use the law of nature, which is going to override the law that is put in place by man, which is called self-preservation, which is the first law, knowing that if we were to be on the same level as those who put the law, that we understand that it's there to protect us, they know that they will automatically be extinct or wiped out. So they're going to really probably enforce it in the sense of not just only being against us or have hate for us, but we talking about trying to survive. I mean, I can give an example, like if a snake is in your house, you're not going to say, oh, well, the snake, you know, me and the snake have no issues. You know that snake bites you and has venom, it's going to poison your bloodstream and you're going to die. So the first thing, even though the snake may not automatically come and attack you, But you know, by nature, the nature of the snake is to do that. So you will chop the head off to kill a snake. So by nature, they're just doing what they have to do to protect themselves. So even though we may understand that the law is on our side, we may act different, but it will not have a dramatic result that we would want to come out of it, because they still have to live or follow the law of nature, which supersedes their law, which is self-preservation. They're not going to allow in their mind a product to overcome and kill off their race.
Hello?
Yeah, you know, to some extent I would agree with you, but I would also put into effect that there's more dynamic to that. The more dynamic to that is just
Hello.
Like you said.
Hold on yeah. a minute, I'm sorry. Patrick.
Yes, yes.
All right, I'm sorry. My phone, my mic was muted to offset any noise. And what happened is you didn't hear me calling you in. So go ahead.
As to the question you asked, I think it would have somewhat of an effect because when people have knowledge of something, they're empowered in a sense. But we still have to deal with the experience portion of it, which is, you know, you can have knowledge of a particular situation or of a particular event and the way that it's supposed to go, but if your experience has shown you that that's not the way it's going to go, then 9 times out of 10 we fall back on experience. And I think without changing the experiences that black people have in America when it comes to interactions with the legal system, that fear is still going to be there. So I always think the most prominent thing, the most prominent problem we have is that fear. Yes, ignorance is a major issue. It's a huge issue. And even when you start talking about the law, it's hard to develop any sort of real education because the law is open for interpretation. That's what makes legal jargon so confusing, is that it'll say one thing, but it's been interpreted another way by the Justice Department or the Supreme Court or whatever higher-level court in another case, and now all of a sudden the words say one thing, but they mean something else. They're interpreted a completely different way, and those interpretations are fluid. They're always changing. So it's really hard to get a foothold on what's going to happen in your case, because the judge might decide to set a new precedent. You know, the lawyers might decide to go after some sort of new precedent. So it becomes very difficult to just say, I know the law. I know that if I go to this section and this blah, 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 that it'll mean this, this, and that. And then the lawyer will come back and say, well, yeah, that's true. This section does say this, this, and that. But what they mean when they were saying that, if you look at the context of the times that the law was written in and the way the sun was rising and the way the shadow on the leaf was pointed towards the tree, they actually meant this. So
you're still wrong. They did that in the Zimmerman trial. I never seen so much twisting of the meaning of the words of the law, of an absolute law, than I heard in the Zimmerman trial. And funny you should say that the law is open to interpretation, because here's what I wanted to say with regards to that. Isn't that exactly what the hell these white cops are doing to our people?
Yep.
Isn't the Stand Your Ground law all open for interpretation? Because that's what Tesla and all of us have said so often. They could. What exactly is reasonable fear for your life? Wouldn't that now open it up to the person's personal perception of what reasonable danger would be? Because, frankly, what do they call a reasonable person? There are people that have, you know, they're germ fanatics. Like, you know, they're germicide fanatics. Everything, anything around them, like Monk, if you guys watch Monk. He has the fear that anything that sneezes or whatever, he's going to die of some airborne disease if you just blink your eyes wrong and you have an allergy.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly whose perception of reasonable danger are they measuring this by?
They're measuring it by their extinction. We are the most race that is threat to them. They're going to be extinct if they don't do that. So, like I said, the law of nature supersedes the law that they set place. They don't have a choice. It's not a choice factor. It's not a sense that when you set about and go to war with another country, we talk about self-survival. That's a whole new different ballgame. There ain't no law on that. There ain't no rules in that. They ain't no, the man give up. Let's free him. This is self-survival. That's the key factor we'll be missing there.
Let me say this right here, because I understand the points that everybody is making, and I hear them real clear. The thing is that, this is something that I heard, and it still stands true to this day, and it's a shame. And I understand what's being said. And, you know, Malcolm, a long time ago, he said that we had, in his time, we have enough laws on the book that if we were real citizen, those same laws could protect our people. We wouldn't need civil rights law if true Americans were being American, or if this America was really for all of us. So when it's held up to interpretation, like Patrick said, whose interpretation is it held up to? Whose standard is it held up to? Let alone the standard of law, but in the minds and in the hearts of men. And if they made these laws for them, which Flair was saying, Jungle Flair was saying, that's true too. If they made these laws really for them, and to me it's like a lot of smacking of our face going on. You know, an outright disrespect. Hey, we'll do this to y'all because guess what? We want our country back. They throw out these little short-term words and coded language to let us know, hey, y'all ain't running nothing. You may have Obama in there in office, but we would show you better than we can tell you that you're not going to overrun this, and this is not your home as you think it is.
What?
And that's what I've been seeing a lot of subliminally. So, yes, they're home. They've always protected their home, and they will keep protecting their home as long as they can. And if we have to be in front of injustices, we will be that. And thus we can stand up and do something about it. Otherwise, we're going to have to just stay in our place as second-class people. That's how
the thing is. But it is true that the piggyback of what you say, it's not originally our home. We were taking it to build a home. It's like any of us on this panel have a house, and we invite someone to our house. Whether they stay with us for 5 years to 500 years, we still going to have laws set up to protect us as the owner or as the first one who in the house, even though the person might help us fix it, the house design here, you know, they may build a little shelf here or put the fridge or whatever the case is, it's not going to be equal. It's not. Like Lee said, with the quote with Malcolm X said, if it was equal, it would not be all these other civil rights laws, which is true. It is not our host. Now, the only way for it to be our host and for us to claim it, you got to get rid of them.
And you know what?
That's the only way. But why is they here? Get rid of the Constitution. The Constitution is set up to protect them. And there's law within the Constitution that we try to use to protect us when the Constitution is set up to protect them. That's like saying the owner of the house, or say y'all house, someone in y'all house trying to tell y'all, well, okay, I understand y'all saying that I can't eat food late at night, but it exactly wasn't 12 o'clock. But yet y'all waking them up and they trying to get some rest to go to work to pay the bills. They don't give a damn. It ain't 12 o'clock yet. They can say, no, you really go to sleep 2 hours early now. They could change it to their interpretation to better their life because that's their house.
Yeah,
same thing with y'all would do in your home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, guys, I have another panelist coming in. I want to give them a shot to speak. Great.
No.
Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Oh, yes.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're going in and out, though, okay?
Oh, okay, can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Okay, what I see is the problem with our people and the powers that be is we've allowed fear to consume us, and it's become debilitating because we there was a time when we were empowered because we weren't afraid and we unified. See some things that we've given up, we should have kept, and some things that we've given up, and some things that we kept, we should have given up. For example, the term boycotting, it's not a bad term. It's a sign of unity. But see, now we're so afraid that if we get together in a group to do anything, that we'll be looked down upon. We'll be victimized. But see, you can't let fear debilitate you. Fear is not what got us to where we are today. It didn't get us out of slavery. It didn't get us our civil rights. It was being bold and allowing the power that we feed on to not let us be afraid and do what we need to do. With the killing of our people, they're able to do that because they use the divide and conquer theory. See, we can't keep blaming everybody else for our problems. I know some people don't like it, but it is the truth. We have to do better for ourselves. If we can unify and say, hey, look, let's not do this to our community. But see, the fact is, and like I said, that there are some of us who, when we try to say what I'm saying right now, either they're dead set against it or they're angry because they want to say it and didn't say it, but there's no action. All we hear is rhetoric. All we hear is rhetoric. We have to, at this point in our history, now, we have to, like we have, we got to find a way to come up with solutions. You know, and it doesn't matter how minute they are. See, people only understand power. People understand power, intellect, and money. You know, and if you don't have those things, nobody's going to listen to you. Nobody's going to listen to you. Like internationally, those people over there in Israel, they're like they're outnumbered, but they're fighting. I'm not advocating anybody losing their life because there are intelligent ways, there are God-fearing ways of doing things. Because you got to remember, we didn't fight our way out of slavery. We didn't fight our way out of slavery. We didn't fire a shot to get ourselves slaves, but we're out of it. We had civil disobedience for civil rights, but we didn't take civil rights by war. We did it by unifying, and a lot of our people who are in positions of influence that can make it happen, they become so complacent and settled. Well, you know, if you got yours, you get mine. Now, if you keep them from acting out, you can make sure that you keep what you got, and not realizing or realizing that without us as a whole, we're weakened anyway. The enemy knows this better than we could ever realize it. Because I just think if people would realize that, why would you cut off your nose to spite your face? If you know something is detrimental to you, why do you keep doing it? You know, I don't want to get religious. It's almost like you got a curse on you. But let's talk in the rational sense. If we would just withhold our money, and we're scared to do it. I'm going to tell you we're scared to do it. If we would just withhold our money for 1 or 2 days from this economy, the ones that are willing to do it, because there's some of them that you see on the TV, they won't do it. Why would you want to do something like that? That's not the way to do it. But people don't understand power. When you hit them in their pockets or weaken them in some kind of way, they'll be more apt to listen to you. Well, why do they have to listen to us now? What do we got to make them want to listen? They got the Asians, they got the Mexicans. When those people come over here, they teach them to be against us. See, because our rise is their fall. You see, but if we could ever just do that and get the hatred and bitterness out of the ones who are in the best position. For example, we know that this government is no longer going to take care of us. We need to get back to some old facts like farming. like farming. It seems stupid. I hear people, I wouldn't pick. The only cotton I pick is out of a medicine bottle. When may become a day when you have to do that? You know, but for the grace of God, we could be over there in Gaza right now. So you can't say what you can't or won't do. You see what I'm saying? So if we could just get those among ourselves that's working against us, that's like the wheat and the tares, you know, they're right amongst you, trying to weaken you, keep you weak for their own selfish gains and desires, when it should be about the whole. And the ones who know and have the means to do it, they're afraid. They're afraid, and they let fear just dominate our being. Until we can get that fear of our life and say, look, it's better that if your right hand offend thee, your right eye offend thee, pluck it out. It's better to lose the part than whole. We need to start being able to do for self now. As we go into this new millennium, it's going to be, they're not going to take care of us anymore. They're even bringing in, they're allowing people to come in to siphon off what we rightfully deserve. And they can rightfully say, well, we can't do that now because we have to take care of this. We didn't come over here on our own. We were forced over here. You see what I'm saying? So we have a different destiny from the ones that were allowed to migrate over here. We have a bigger stake than they do. And if we would just come together and do, make a concrete action, because it's talking, it's making me weary. It's making me weary. You know, if a man, for example, let it end just like me. If you are a person that can make $1 million a year, put some of that back into your community. Don't just say, I got mine, you get yours, because the principle, do you understand the divide and conquer principle? Even if you make $1 million, if they divide you, you're not going to keep it long anyway, because the minute we get some means, the goal of the enemy is to take it from you anyway. And no man is a mountain. So if we could ever do that, that's the first thing. We got to stop talking and actually put down some concrete things. I mean, if it means starting from, because we got to feed ourselves. This public assistance thing is going to go out the window. And anybody with any insight at all can see that. With the next administration, it's going to be a hell of a lot different. The fact that Obama's in there, he's a very wise man, whether you agree with his policy or not. I don't agree with all his policies, but he's a very wise man. He's kept us from retrogressing where we would if we had had a John McCain in there. But we'd already be in 3 or 4 wars right now. He's not doing nothing. And we don't support the man, because we'd rather sit on Fox and Hannity and talk against the man just to have airtime instead of trying to see where his brother comes from so we can use what he came in with to do something positive. The man came in wanting to do infrastructure, give us jobs. Well, you know you can't do everything once, but now he's trying to do it, and they fight against that. He didn't get a chance to do everything once. Cut him out. He cut everything he could cut. He cut everything he could cut from us. Okay, and we went for it. That's why I don't really like the Democrat Party too much. But the Republican Party, they cutthroat. They have no rules. And I'm not talking about morals or conscience, because some people just don't have those anyway. But I'm saying, you know, he's trying to do some things now, and they still are turning against him. And we won't stick up for the brother. We won't stick up for him. And not sticking with him is turning against ourselves, because one thing I can say, and I'm going to end it right here, that Obamacare, I don't really care for it, because it's not comprehensive enough. The rich don't like it, of course, and it does nothing for the poor. A person who's in 30 to 60 that don't have no income at all, it does nothing for you. And these people will not give you no Medicaid unless you are claiming to be totally disabled or are disabled. They'll do nothing for you. So if we have to start doing something concrete, if it's boycotting, and I ain't talking about boycotting, just marching. I'm talking about withholding our dollars. If we withheld them for a week, see, because only 50% of us are going to do it anyway, because the rest of them is going to be running back to them. They plan on doing it. They plan on doing it. Those kind of people. But if we who are sincere about it withhold our funds for a week, you know, take care of our elders, whatever, they would look at us in a different light, man. They would look at it, and that's all I have to say about that. Thank you. That's all, yeah. You know. That's the way I see it. You know, we've been talking. Now it's time for action, because in 2014, when God blessed us with a minority president, that's not going to be anymore after this. I just really don't believe it. I just don't. But like, well, anything can happen now. But the way this country's going, that they're warmongers. That they're saying he's not. Here's a man that's got five or six world-changing issues going on at one time, and they don't want the brother to even take a break to even be with his family. You know? They don't want, and as far as doing something for minorities, that's out of the question. But you notice this. Every time he does something that's in our interest, oh, he's the worst person in the world. Oh, he's the worst person. I ain't never seen so disrespectful. Don't even respect the seat. But anything that you say that's in their interest, yeah, let's go over there and back Crimea so we can get our capitalist industries over there and all over the other parts of the world. Oh, they love him then. Even McCain or Boehner or say something positive about him. But unless he's doing that, then they have no use for him. Talk to him on these TV shows and get our own people to talk so negative about this man who's trying to do nothing but good for us, even though he's fighting the powers that be. We don't know what that man goes through. We
Absolutely.
Don't know. But those of
Absolutely.
Us who have an idea of how the system works, we know that Obama doesn't run this country. There are a certain group of men who run the country. They let him be there so he can keep us from becoming antisocial. And the fact that he's mulatto appeal to some of their race. See, because it's all about numbers, but we know they steal elections anyway. So, you know, I feel like this time it was out of their hands and it happened. They're not going to let it happen again. They're not going to let it happen again, people. I'm sorry.
You're right. Let me ask you something, sir. You think, I agree with you totally that fear, our fear, has become debilitating. Okay?
Yeah.
It has become debilitating. It has definitely become our own frozen barrier. My question is, if we had gone back a little bit, if we understood more about how all of these officials or navigators or housing authority people should be behaving or what laws they should be following, do you think that us being versed in that would have given us a little spurt of courage to act on it?
Yes, ma'am, I do. And now, even though I'm saying, I do believe that we have to be at the table. So there are two areas of philosophy. Some folks say that the powers that be, they're disagreeable to live with in peace. We should have nothing to do with them. I don't feel that way. I feel like even though we can't do something about certain things, we need to let them know. No, I know you're not practicing the law fairly and equally, but I want you to know this. I'm watching you, what you're doing. And an injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. If we knew, had a better idea about our rights, like the lady who was put out of her apartment without anyone. That's an illegal eviction. At least where I'm from. That's an illegal. You know, y'all guys talk like New York. You can't do nothing about illegal. My brother's a lawyer, and he knew some people were illegally evicted before he moved into an apartment complex. They illegally evicted him because of his race. He got tens of thousands of dollars for it. I mean, it's clearly an illegal eviction. But you know what? There's some people, they'll listen to more than will on the fact that they're articulate or on the fact that they're financial means. You know, if they feel like that you are powerless against them, then they'll do you any kind of way. You don't see them busting heads over in Baldwin Hills in California. That they do it in Brooklyn or wherever. They feel like the people won't have a say when they complain about what was happening. Look how he did the brother. The brother telling him, I can't breathe. Those guys did that because they felt they could do that and get away with it. The guy beat the woman down on the freeway. He did that. Nobody, you know, unless he's a psychopath or something, you're not going to do nothing that's obviously, overtly against you that's going to get you fired or killed. They kill us with impunity. The girl went up there to the door. He sees it's a black girl. Shoot her. You know, just shoot her down like a dog. You know what I'm saying? Trayvon. The other boy you were talking about, you know, just because a person is a little intoxicated doesn't give you the right to take their lives. So if we had a better idea and we could share it among our people. But the thing is, my sister, we have to develop a mindset where we want to listen to. You talk to some of our folks, man, they'll talk about you real bad for just trying to do something that you know it takes all of us all of us to do, because one of the two of us, we can't change this. And we try, and I feel like action speaks louder than words. But no man's a mountain. We need to know the law. We need to tell those who are illiterate of the law or who's ignorant of the law, and I don't mean in the bad sense, that don't know, so they can have the courage. See, once you know, you're like, oh, that's how it works. You develop a courage, and you will see that in some situations, it actually works.
And I think here's the problem we have is because you just kind of did it just now, not in a problematic way, in a defensive way. The problem that we have as a people is that when we say the word ignorant or illiterate, I mean, illiterate means what it means, but saying ignorant of something doesn't put anybody down, because ignorance means just that you're unaware of something. You know, a lot of people are so busy looking at the superficial aspect of stuff, but they're missing the meat of the situation. I believe that if we were more aware of how people are supposed to act or use their authority, that if we act and push that law out and act on it, the first time something took place or seemed to be about to take place, it wouldn't get to where we're at. I do believe that
yes,
we have a debilitating fear.
Yes, I do believe that. Yes, ma'am.
But I believe that the time has come for us to start looking at our kids and telling ourselves, or, you know, really asking ourselves, is our fear more important than saving our child? I mean, I don't understand.
Absolutely. 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 You know, I think it was one, somebody said, a man who wants, who can, who doesn't have anything to live for, will fall, won't stand up for one thing or fall for anything. You know, you have to... And we have to start now teaching our little kids. It has to be like this, ma'am. You know how when we have, a concert in our community, we'll run to it in mass numbers. When an injustice or something that's in our benefit as a whole is mentioned, we should run to that just as well. But we won't do it, and I don't know what that spark would take to be that way except for hardship. It's unfortunate it takes hardship to bring us together. Now, that's really a sad commentary.
Yeah.
A hardship to bring us together.
It's right
okay.
Now.
Hardship right now
going on. And the thing is, enough of us are not coming together in the hardship that we face now.
Mm-hmm.
With gentrification going on in these major cities, people...
Mm-hmm.
Being raised up where they got to leave, and the people who used to this generations ago, their daughters and sons are coming back into town. It's just so much going on that is awful overwhelming to many people. It's a lot of people who went up north and stayed for years. Many of them and even their children are coming back because they can't cope with all what's going on up there.
That's correct. That's correct. But see, if you see a situation and you don't deal with it at the present time, it comes back to haunt you as an alien force. It'll come back to you. You know, we don't keep getting educated. You know, it'll come back to us in the form of us being ignorant of a lot of things, not having knowledge and power.
Right.
Another man's house, if you're in these places where they can kick you out when they get ready and make sure that you can't have the money to put up and all that right there, they have unity when it comes to that. And they own
do.
So if we don't own land, if we have no own, we don't own land ownership, a man without land is not really a man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you know I found out today from watching the news, but me and my friend, I've been thinking about this, that you could become a goat farmer, and you could pretty much get rich down south. They got people, man, that got contracts that want goats. They just want goats. But we won't do it because, I guess, our pride in a way. Oh, we could raise goats and become rich, just raising goats. And it was on World News. It was on World News today.
Well,
people don't think about this. And then think about this. We, you know, there are many millionaires in our community. If we would say, hey, look, you know, it's not all about me. You know, let me build some cheap, affordable housing for the people who can scantily afford it. And then the thing is, you get income off of it, And then if you are doing something that you can get enough people behind you, you can get funds to perpetuate it. But we won't do it. We're so selfish, we won't do it. I got mine, you get yours. It's the order of the day. And it's sad. Because we can't do anything without each other.
Just like I earlier mentioned, Barnett was speaking on the word ignorant, on how we use it in a negative way, but it just really means not to know.
Not know.
It's the same thing,
not to know.
It's the same way how you use the word nigger or negro. The word negro just means dead of history. So whenever we use it, some of us try to use it in a positive way. Hey, that's my nigger. But what you're saying is they're dead of history. So when a person is not dead of history, then they can be confident in who they are because they know who they is. When someone doesn't know themselves, which means to know history, and anything you take upon or any adventure you have history of it to be able to fully understand it. Without history, you have no understanding. That's why the history is so important. And that's why it is important to understand where the word nigger come from, because once you understand that, hey, this is why the oppressors call me a negro, because I'm dead of self, which is dead of history, let me get into history. Let me get into where I came from.
They want to kill your self-esteem so you won't remember that you were once a king, that you have the ability to rule, that you have the ability to be the head of a corporation, of a business of your own, where you can become self-perpetuating and you won't need them. Anybody that depends on somebody else knows that the minute they get tired of you, they can get rid of you. You have to be able to stand on your own.
And you know what? We need to stop racing straight into those Venus flytraps. You know, the ones where they show you the money with the extra zeros, and all you got to do is bark like a dog or stand up and act like you're stupid.
Yep.
Or, you understand? We need to stop doing that. Because every time we do it, we go for what glitters like gold, and as soon as it hits the end of the river and all the paint comes off.
And
now we're the ones
that watching us.
Now we're the ones they dangle in front for target practice or otherwise.
Yes, and our kids seeing this.
Right, and to get back to the question on for us to look at the law to be a part of a help to us, it's like saying when the slave back in days used to say, "Master, we sick." Master, I hope you learn it as if the law was made for us.
Yep,
you know,
yep,
it was never made for us to help us. And on top of that, us getting together, it's not going to be enough. You know, it's really our mindset that have to be on one accord. When our mindset is on one accord, and then the numbers come as one, then we can have a movement. Because you can have 1 million people or 2 million people together, but everyone have a different thought process.
You got thousands, a million opinions. That's not going to get you nowhere. A million different opinions not going to get you nowhere. We have to designate those whom we feel a moral and good confidence in to lead us in the right direction. You know what I'm saying?
Gentlemen,
if we're going the right direction, we will move forward.
Well,
I have another panelist on the line, and I have to. Only 9 minutes left, so hang on and let me bring them in, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
All right. Welcome to the show,
Cole.
You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on, gentlemen?
I thought you were going to bed, buddy. You had a long day today.
I did have a long day. I was just tuning in, and, you know, sometimes the spirit moves you. So I was just sitting there and listening. A lot of good things going on. I just wanted to talk about a few things. But one thing somebody had mentioned earlier was that he didn't fight during the freak for
find a way out of slavery.
Right. But I think that if you really look at it, it's a lot of the history that wasn't told. And the Gullah Wars were former slaves and Native Americans who grouped up and they were fighting the Southern armies. And they weakened the Southern army to the point where the South couldn't win the war against the North. So there was a lot of there were fights and so we did fight. So I don't want
fight. I didn't mean that we didn't get in skirmishes and things like. But I'm talking about as a movement. See me myself. I didn't want to take a religious problem. I feel God got us out of slavery because we didn't have the weapons or everything was against us. But we did. We had troops that fought. We did. You know, we did.
I get your point, brother. I get your point. I mean, you make good points. I listen to a lot of what you guys are talking about, and you make good points. I think one of the things that I think I heard was fear. And I think fear is the biggest reason why we don't gather and we don't fight our oppressor, why we don't stand up against them. I think it's because of the fear that was placed in us in all those years. I think the fear that that they use today, I mean, when you just, you mention it now, the brothers and sisters who are so fearful of standing up against, in opposition of the system, that they choose to ride along or join it, even though they're seen as less than in the system. So,
amen.
I think the fear is what drives most of the lack of cooperation. And in terms of us having to get to that new low so we will actually fight, I think that basically the entire black population as a whole is overly medicated to the point where I don't think that is going to be the catalyst anymore, because there was a time when where we are right now would have been way too far before somebody would have woke up and said, man, we need to fight this. We need to do something about this. So I think there are a lot of other factors that play a role in us not being able to unify against this giant that we face. I do think we have to, but I think that we need to look at the big picture that, they're drugging us with the water.
Yeah.
Now they're saturating our children, so our children think getting high and hanging out is a good thing. So now marijuana is the new over the counter drug, marijuana. And in addition to that,
it is the new black.
And everybody else is still on our channel when it comes to these movements. But back to our community, I just think that we need to funnel our attention to the youth. I think we waste too much time talking to anybody 25 and older who hasn't made up their mind to join this party. And that's what I think. I think a lot of our energy is wasted. We're not efficient enough to, because we keep talking to people who are set in their ways, who are glad to be entertained when they hear somebody speak of reverence.
And don't want to put no action.
Right. Basically, there's a lot of people clapping and applauding. Yeah, I think right on, brother preached. But at the end of the day, nobody's doing anything about it. It becomes water cooler politics. It becomes
something
to talk about at the barbershop and the salons. So we need to get to the youth, and so that they're talking about it. Because when I go, and this is what I do, but I go out and talk to the youth, and I go to the community. In fact, I was just in Harlem last weekend. So I try to go to the community. And the things that when you talk to the children are ready to get up and do something.
Absolutely.
You talk to the adults, they clap, all right, brother, right on. They give you that pump, but then they go back to what they were doing before they came up to the event. So I think that the focus of our movement needs to be the youth.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
You know what? That was like that scene in I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, when he was going out there saying, we have to put this man with his bad gold down. Yes, we have to go out there and charge the field. Yep, brother, will you help me? He said, yes, well, and backed off. Now, you see, that's what we're doing. Now, Professor, we got 5 minutes left, and I want to ask you this question, and I want to hear what you have to say. Do you believe, and I know you've been listening in, so you know what I'm going to ask you, with everything that I mentioned today specifically on the table, from the elderly ladies with illegal evictions to the specific, and you actually were the one who helped me realize Renisha McBride didn't even get the proper outrage, recognition, and publicity from us that it deserved. You kept it posting. So my question is, do you think that if we had understood for Eric Garner that the chokehold is illegal even from the cops' own bosses, do you think that if we had enough knowledge of our rights and the laws, our rights within the laws, that this man wouldn't be able to have the audacity to sit there and use I feared for my life through a screen door as a defense? Do you think it would have made a difference? Would we have done something different?
I think it absolutely would have made a difference, because it's like this. If you trying to run a touchdown.
Hello, I was asking the professor that question because I heard from you. So just give me 1 second because there's only a few minutes left.
Okay, sorry.
All right, professor, go ahead, honey.
No, it's fine. The brother's enthusiastic. Brother, trust us. We're going to have this show again.
Great.
And
And if you want to call my show on Thursday, you can call their show too. The thing is that, and I spoke about this earlier on the radio tonight on Sonez's show. You know, here in Philly, we used to have that same problem with police brutality and things of that nature until people start blowing the heads off of these cops. And I'm not advocating that, but what I'm saying is it gave people pause. It gave the police pause. They had to come up with different strategies on how to deal with people. And because that whole I'm going to choke you till you die, I'm going to just shoot unarmed people, when that got to the point here in Philly where people were saying, okay, I'm not even going to let you get close to me. As soon as I see you and you're coming in my direction, I'm going to blow your head off. Now, I'm not saying that that's totally the way we need to go, but what I'm saying is that got results. It backed people off. It backed the police off of people here in Philly. Now, what I'm going to say to you about Eric Garner's situation, the crowd, the mob should have mobbed the police officers. And you know why? And they need to do that. They need to do that every single time. And if they're not going to mob them, brick them, stone them, do something. There needs to be a consequence because this doesn't happen to any other community. No other community do they feel free enough to walk in because they fear some type of retribution.
We can't fear retribution because they're killing us wholesale anyway.
Right. So we need to be able to go into – so when they come in those communities, they come in and they do those things, there needs to be a consequence. Now, there also needs to be organization because it has to be to a point where we form a moral clause and have a moral plan that's committed to amongst blacks across the nation. But what I mean is when there's something like that occurs, every street should shut down the financial district until some justice is served.
So
when Eric Garner got killed, we should have been out here in Philly locking the streets down. They should have been been all over all the boroughs in New York locking the streets down. They should have been in Chicago locking the streets down.
Every single time,
guys, I got 1 minute left, so I have to cut you short. We're going to continue this tomorrow, even though it's going to be a different main subject. It's still going to have this content flowing along because tomorrow we're going to be actually dealing with direct black economic development and knowing the laws in that respect as well. So, Professor, if you can, I really would like you here tomorrow. And, young man, what's your name?
David Hawkins.
Hi, David Hawkins. Okay, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What state are you calling from, honey?
I'm calling from rural Greenville, Mississippi.
Okay. You can, if you don't mind, if you have a Facebook account, join us in on the lounge so that I can say thank you to you properly, along with everybody else. Professor, tomorrow, we're going to continue this because
same time, honey, 10:30, same time. Yes,
so
ma'am.
Until tomorrow night, everybody, be blessed, be a blessing, make a difference. Let's keep the fight going, and let's keep justice up for these young men and women that are being taken by injustices and our ignorance to our rights and the law. So good night and God bless.
God bless.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.